Welcome everybody to this presentation about secure communications with open source PKI. I'm Johan Eklund and this is Tom Lukeberg. We both work for Prime Key Solutions here in Sweden. And we're core developers of EGBCA, an open source certificate authority. We're also involved in a couple of other projects, like SignServer and so on.
They are on the slide, but you can't see them. Sorry.
We're going to start by explaining some basics of encryption, moving on to certificates and how you build a hierarchy of certificates. And then we're going to show some examples of how you can use this in reality. So, to start with the basics. Most of you probably know this already. Basic encryption. We have a single key, a secret key, that can be used for both encryption and decryption. Well, it's a simple mathematical operation, but the problem is, like, if you're about to establish a secure channel, both has to know this secret key. So you have to get this secret key to the other part somehow. And that led to the invention of asymmetric encryption. In this case, you have two keys, a pair of keys, a public and a private. And using these mathematical operations, we could it's easy to encrypt something with a public key. Everybody can do it, but only the owner of the private key could decrypt it then. So if I spread my public key around this room, everybody could encrypt some data and spread it all around again, like maybe on a torrent tracker or something, but I would still be the only one that could decrypt it. And this can also be used, the same operations, but backwards for signatures. So you have a plain text, you sign it. If I sign it with my private key, everybody in here who has my public key would be able to verify that this data comes from me and has been signed by me. So, what is a certificate then? We have to be able to somehow couple this public key to the data about who's the owner of the private key with some information, maybe a name or something. And this is what a certificate is for. So we embed the public key, some information about the owner, maybe my name, Johan, or something. We have some usage for, could I use this private key for signing emails or encrypting emails? Am I allowed to do authentication to a website? And we say things like validity, when was this certificate issued and when does it expire? And some verification information, like if I change my name, I'm using the certificate with should be able to verify that this is still a valid certificate. So we have to have that information in the certificate too. And finally, a signature by the certificate authority that guarantees that this information in the certificate is correct. So the certificate authority then, it's a self-signed certificate. And that basically means the CA's private key assigned its own certificate guaranteeing its own authenticity. And this private key can then be used for issuing other certificates, like maybe my user certificate. I'll show you in a bit on the next slide here. But so, to be able to verify, for example, my or Carol's certificate here, we start by checking the certificate, Carol's certificate. Is this in a list of trusted certificates? Well, no, we can't have every single user certificate in a list of trusted certificates. If you have like an organization with thousands of members, that would be impossible, or it would be a very huge list. So it's not in the list. Then we check the signature that is signed the actual data in the certificate. We check if it's valid, has it expired, or has it been revoked. And then we verify the issuer of this certificate. In this case, it's the root certificate. And we do the same thing over again. So we start by checking, is this in the list of trusted certificates? In this case, it is. So that way I can know that Carol's certificate is a certificate I can trust. Next slide. But we still need to know that the certificate belongs to Carol in this case. So I'm going to send her some random data, and if she signs that data, returns it back to me, I'm able to verify that she has used her private key with the public key that's in the certificate. So that way I can couple the information in the certificate to the action of the one I'm talking to. So that way I can use this for authentication. And yeah, that's called proof of possession. And then we can build more advanced hierarchies, limiting trust. And for example, a big organization might want to have a special CA issuing server certificates, one for issuing user certificates. Then you have an offline root CA that's maybe in a bunker with keys and hardware and everything. And so it's not exposed to hackers and things like that. And you have less security, like an online sub CA. And at the lowest level, you have the user certificates. It might be a single file, a soft token, in like a web browser, or like just a single file on a server somewhere. Or you could, of course, use like smart cards also. So if you lose a key, there has to be some way to verify that the certificate isn't valid anymore. So we have some ways of doing this. It's the certificate revocation list. That's basically a list of all revoked certificate that's not valid anymore. And this is signed by the CA, so we can verify that this is the actual list that revoked certificates. We have Delta CRLs. That's like the CRL, but just updates all the time to save bandwidth. And then you have the online certificate status protocol. And when using that, you're doing a network connection to the validation authority, checking the certificate instantly. So when to use this? Well, for signatures, authentication, and encryption, you have to have, obviously have to have some kind of need for asymmetric encryption. And what's very special is you have to have some common point of trust. There has to be like a department, IT department maybe in your company, or an entity inside the organization that everybody that will have a certificate can trust. That's the main thing. And you will have the benefit then of central management with revocation and verification. That's really simple. So when should you avoid it? Of course, like in the real world, like in here, I don't think there's a single person who trusts everyone else in this room, so it would be really hard to agree on this single point of trust. So in that case, the Webel trust from the GNUPG is much better. And also when you have like a need for plausible deniability, if you do proper authentication with like unnecessary information, if you put your like social security number in certificates, you will leave this trace everywhere. So that's not a very good idea. And the really dark side of PKI, you can use it for trusting computing. That could be a good thing. Like if I download updates from some kind of source, I want to be able to verify that this is K code, this is issued by the ones that I trust. But it can also be used to like lock down mobile phones to only allow signed code, and then it's a pretty bad thing. And of course we have digital rights management, and at least in software it's really defective by design. There's no point, really. Unfortunately in hardware it could work, like computer parts authenticating each other. And that's pretty evil. So normally we separate the duties of... we have the registration authority that might be the person typing in the information, like checking the ID of a person in the enrollment process. CSRs.org is a great initiative to use the community as this authority. You can check their homepage for more information about how this works. And then you have the certificate authority. That's the one issuing the actual certificates. And last is the validation authority. That's where you check the revocation status. And usually, like in our project, EGBCA, it's all integrated into the same product, or you can like lift out part if you like. So very flexible. So there are a couple of different open source CAs. OpenSSL, it's included in every Linux distribution. So it's simple and, well, it's great for simple tasks. And you have a GUI for it also. There's some other open CA and open XPKI. They're pretty early versions still. And of course biased, but you have the full scale a reliable project in USA. It's based LGPL and based on enterprise Java, so you can use it on any platform. So on to the demonstration.
So I wanted to make a short demonstration of, in case anyone was doubting that you can do all of these things using only open software and free software, and maybe even convince some of you that once you've set up the infrastructure, it's actually quite easy to use. Setting this infrastructure up isn't always very easy, but once you have it up and running, it should be fairly easy to use. So I'm going to demonstrate issuing certificates for SSL, encrypting and signing email, a VPN network, and then sign some code from the GBCA project. So for this, I need my virtual machine. I thought it wasn't working. Okay, so the first tool that we're going to use is EJBCA, which is our RCA. You can do different things. One of the things that I've already prepared, apart from installing EJBCA and a few other things, is to prepare a few certificate profiles. And when you do that, you can use those profiles to issue certificates, and you don't have to specify what information goes into the certificate every time you issue a new certificate. They can look something like this, for example. It's quite a long list. So these are all the things you could choose from when you create a certificate. But because this is quite a long list and you don't want to be scrolling through this every time, so we've sort of prepared the profile for you already. So, the first thing I'm going to do is create a certificate for an Apache server that I'm going to be setting up on this computer. I've decided that this is Alice's computer, and she's going to have an Apache server. So I go to add entity. And it's even so prepared that I've already typed Apache SSL in there. That's actually Firefox remembering the last time I did. I need to set the password so that the user or server can use that password when they retrieve the certificate. I type a common name, which is the name of this computer, in this case EJBCA desktop. An organization and country. I could put some other information in there, but this time I decided this is what we want. We choose the CA for it, which is called, in this case, admin CA1. And the PEM token, because it's easy to use with Apache. So we add that identity. Now, because the OpenSSL or the Apache server can't get its certificate from a browser, in this case I'm going to generate it from the command line using the CA tool. So as you can see, we are in the EJBCA directory. I type bin / EJBCA and then batch, which will create all the unfinished certificates in a list. And hopefully we will get one for Apache server. Batch generating one user for Apache SSL. So now we should have a, if we look at in one of the directories here, P12, PEM, you will find that the certificate is here. There's a C8 certificate, there's a key file, and the certificate for the actual machine. So, let's have a look at my OpenVPN configuration for this. Sorry. Thank you. So, um, conf password, and of course you need to configure Apache first. You need to somewhere in here. Say stop if you see it.
I'll just go in the sites enabled.
Sites enabled. Sorry. Sorry, I knew I did this of course 1 hour ago when there was no problem. Mm. No.
Yeah, no reach up at all.
That's
called
default. There we go. Sorry about that. Yes. And here of course I've already prepared for you the and typed in the proper address URL. So I close that.
Could we look at it once more?
Sure.
Might be worth pointing out that we define the directory that's private that requires client authentication. So might see that later.
Oh yes. I need now, of course, a certificate. Well, yes, this is the, of course, the certificate for the machine, and we need a certificate for Alice as well. So I'm going to create a certificate for Alice as well. I'm going to add an identity. This time I'm going to use another profile, which we call multipurpose user. And this is because, of course, that Alice will want to do all of these different things. So I type name for password. Email address, because she's going to use this for email signing and encryption. Alice is a good name for her. Same organization and country as before. And I add an ending. I don't think I actually started. So, sudo. Of course, fingers crossed, this will start my Apache server. No? Holy crap.
Okay.
All right. Sorry. No problem. And now, with Alice, I'm going to import the. No, I'm going to create the certificate, and import it into my or Alice's browser.
What happens if you try to access that web server right now, right here?
Which web server?
The Apache, the SSL. Configured Apache. Is it possible to access it without a client certificate?
Good idea. Let's have a look. This is in fact that server. It works.
It works. Yeah.
And if we try to access the private area,
okay.
It shouldn't work. So I'm going to need to choose a certificate here.
Mm-hmm.
The only certificate I have already is the super admin, and it. I don't want to choose this one because then I'll have to restart.
It's for EGBC internal administration, mm-hmm.
So connection here.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes, where were we? Where was I? Yes, so I'm going to create a browser certificate for Alice. Of course, at this point, the CA is on the local machine, but Alice could do this from anywhere where she could reach the CA or the RA even. Alice types a name and a password that we told her over the phone, or
it's a one-time thing. So.
It's a one-time password. No. high grade will be okay. I think that, or I'm pretty sure that means 2048. I don't know. We don't type in this. It's, this message is from Firefox. They call it high grade. It means 2048 bits. Now we have a certificate here. We could have a quick look at it maybe. Use certificates, we can see that the super admin that you saw earlier is there. It's also Alice's. And we can see a few things about our certificate here. So, okay, now we can hopefully log on to the Apache server. Okay. It works. Private area, I choose Alice's instead. And I have access to this.
And that question.
Yes.
That enrollment step actually, it communicates also with the EJCBA.
EJBCA.
Thank you.
The CA.
Yes. So that something happens in Firefox and then it talks to the EJBCA and then.
Actually, what happens is the certificate is or the private key is created on the browser. What this means is, for example, if you had a card and you wanted to have the certificate on the card instead, if the private key would be created on the card and it would never ever leave the card, hopefully. unless someone very clever and very resourceful hack you. Yes. And so for Alice to be able to do some of the other things, she will want to export, or as they call it, back up her certificate. And so we're going to choose a directory, in this case EJBCA P12, call it alice.p12, and save it there. Here's a new super safe password.
Just the key is, private key is only in the file, you need some sort of password to protect it, so.
Preferably a much better password than the one I just typed in.
Yeah, like for 123, I guess.
Could be.
Yeah.
yes. So, let's try and see what we can do with Thunderbird. We can go to Edit Preferences, View Certificates, and then import the certificate, the P12 that we just exported. Alice, her P12 is there. Open, type the super safe password. And now we need to type a new password for. Okay, so now we have the certificate in Thunderbird. Going to close that. We need to set up her preferences in order to for her to use it when she uses Thunderbird. So it's the only certificate in there, so it's the default one. Just press OK. Now we're going to have it both for signing messages and for encrypting and decrypting messages. Okay, and I should be ready to send someone an email. Unfortunately, this is on a local machine, so Alice is going to send herself a letter this time. Alice at desktop. Testing. And signed and encrypted. The reason I can do this is I have, of course, already my public key. If I didn't have the public key of the person I wanted to send a message to, I wouldn't be able to encrypt it. I could sign my own message and then they would have be able to encrypt it back. So this is how we exchange public keys. And then I just type select encrypt to encrypt as well. And then I could read. And of course,
never
it says
it.
Here.
Sorry?
You never signed it.
Oh, I forgot to sign it.
Yeah.
Oh, well. You guys want me to do another one, or do you trust me? No, I'll do another one. Right.
It's encrypted.
Nice. Sign. I thought that would be selected by default, but it wasn't. So I'll send this one just signed then. Sign. And now you can see that it's signed. You would have both the icons if it was signed and encrypted. Okay. And Alice, of course, is on the EJBCA team, so she wants to do code signing, but apparently we don't have that much time, so I'm going to skip this step. Do you have a question?
If you send want encrypt message to someone you don't know the key yet,
yes.
I think it actually checks automatically if you wanted to.
If you have their key?
No, if actually the key on key service, because the email address is if it's a field you can search for on public key service. If you say, yeah, I want to encrypt this email to some NS right address,
okay,
and you check your set in the key service,
okay,
and see if it's in that. If it's not in that key server, then it will return, oh, I can't find the key. But if it's in there, it should automatically get it
okay
for you.
See? Because I've apparently run over time so much, please come visit us at our booth. And I will show you both signing and then OpenVPN, because Johan has a few things he wants to say as well.
Take it out for 5 minutes. Show OpenVPN.
You think?
More important than my stuff. Yeah.
Okay. For the OpenVPN then, I've already installed a server which is running also on my computer, but it's another virtual machine. I can use.
We have copied the default configuration from the examples directory, so it's a real simple setup. The only thing we're going to change is our keys that are generated with EGBC. So.
So if we have a look at the configuration setup I have here, I have said that. Use Alice's P12 for OpenVPN. Apart from and the rest of it is just OpenVPN setup. So I should be able to just start OpenVPN. Password.
And that's the backup password for protecting the key store when you export it.
And then I can do config just to make sure it's there. And I do have my tunnel open. I have an Apache server on that on the VPN as well, so I'll see if I can access it, and you see that the that it's 10.1.0.1, which is the address of the VPN server, and I'm actually connected to Bob's Apache server. Yeah, so then at least that's OpenVPN as well.
Yep, perfect.
I will let you one finish mentioning some.
Yeah. I visited the Oasis conference some weeks ago, and there's some Federation friends I think it's really interesting. Like, you have, there's a need for having different identities on the net, that's pretty obvious. And the Higgins project from Eclipse Foundation is a way to manage those different identities. So you can have this information card that you use one card for like a couple of websites where you have one identity, and another card for some other websites. And you can have cards with X509, that's regular certificates support. And OpenID, it's pretty mature, but still there's only Start SSL that has certificate support yet. And I'm not sure if they can trust it, but maybe. And real life thing is bridging PKIs. Biopharm, a big umbrella corporation for the pharmaceutical companies. They're signing their top CAs of the different companies to be able to verify and use e-invoicing from different companies. So something signed in one company can be verified in other companies. And that saves them a lot of trouble. So they don't trust the entire PKIs of the other company. You don't trust your competition to like log in to your servers, but you can trust them for like signing some of the documents. And electronic signatures, it's a real mess. Every country has their own standard or way of thinking of things. And so if you're going to do some e-invoicing over borders, you have to contract some local entities and ask them. And there's a real need for standardization, but not much is happening right now. And we have an upcoming proposal to the EU that the business process as such should be sufficient to guarantee that all the taxes have been done properly, and that would render asymmetric solutions like signatures obsolete. So, yeah, there's a new standard for passports from September next year. Every country will have to put their citizens' biometric data in the passport, like fingerprints at first, maybe some more stuff later. And, well, the good news in that is that at least the passport reader inspection system has to verify, the passport will verify the inspection system before releasing this data. And to accomplish this, they have built a new sort of PKI based on card verifiable certificates. And this is because the chip in the passport is very slow and weak. So they had to strip down regular certificates to make these. And we don't have any revocation checks, so these inspection systems will have a very short lifetime instead, for like 1 to 3 days. And on top of that, you have document verified, that's signed by different countries. You can show the next slide. So this is what this PKI would look like for Sweden. And this is only the other Nordic countries. So if you have like a Norwegian passport that comes to the Swedish border and checked by the inspection system, this certificate is signed by document verifying certificates that's in turn signed by the Norwegian root CA. So every country would have to have like, yeah, at least 2 certificates for every other country. So it becomes a real complex hierarchy. And that's because, well, you can't have like one CA for all of Europe, since we're a federation of countries cooperating. So then they choose to solve it this way instead. Smart cards. If you can, you should use smart cards to protect the private key, because then you can be sure that no one can copy it. It's like, you can think of it as a smart computer. All the operations is done inside the chip, so no one could ever copy it. So you should read more about it. And PKCS 11 is a good standard for talking to these kind of devices. It's not the perfect standard. It's a lot of variations out there.
It's a standard.
Yeah, but it's a sort of standard. So if you're building a new project for your specific card, you should at least investigate if you could use this standard instead of like building something specific for the card. And we're still missing some free card drivers. Next one. So in summary, PKI is great as a stable infrastructure, but there is this, you have to have this common point of trust for it to be usable. But then you would have the benefits of central management and, well, it simplifies authentication and signatures, also encryption. And feel free to contact us if you have any more questions or later. But we can have some questions right away.
Questions now?
Yeah.
Yes. Question.
Please.
Does EJBCA address organizational key escrow in case of if someone loses their private key or whatever?
Yeah.
Even
you could back up your keys if you like.
Let's say
there's
you back up and you lose the backup too. What happens?
You're screwed.
Yeah. If you lose your backup, there is no backup. You have to back up the database also, maybe. Like.
So there is no like central repository that you can refer to in case like a third backup.
Well, you should back up your database with all the certificates and things like that. So if you also save a copy of the key, you have that policy in your organization that you say should save a copy of the user's key, then of course you would have that in the backup.
So that should be
database.
Done annually, right?
Well, or Chromium maybe. Like, it depends on the database you're using also. So.
You only need it if you want to be able to encrypt stuff. And if you do want to be able to encrypt stuff and you save the private keys somewhere, it's now not only on the smart card anymore. And what this means that is that you have a problem because you need to make sure that no one has access ever to this store where you store these keys.
But it's a matter of policy in that organization.
Of course, so it can be done if you need to, but it's going to be, it could be a security problem, and the solution could be very expensive.
The more practical solution would be a simple revocation of the key and creating
yes.
a new one, probably.
Yes.
But you have encrypted the stuff, encrypted data
exactly.
that you can't decrypt.
So,
yeah.
Exactly.
You
so
can also
it's a problem. So.
You can also encrypt stuff with more than one key. If you have that policy, then as soon as you lose your key, if you and I are always encrypting stuff together,
like
then
key
if I lose
segmentation,
my...
segmentation, right?
Sorry?
Like, it's like key segmentation, or I don't know the exact...
I don't know if it's called that, but it can be done anyway, so...
No, it means that you're able to decrypt it with one of these keys.
One.
Yes,
not,
yes.
You don't need both, it's enough if you have one of them.
Yeah.
So if you lose your key, he still can decrypt
this
it.
Is like a fragmentation and a scattering technique that several people have, you know, the different pieces of the key. If one of the pieces is lost, they can recover that lost piece with the other two fragments.
Way it's done is you use symmetric encryption to encrypt whatever it is you want to encrypt. And the key with which you encrypted it is then encrypted once for you and once for me, and then if we want to everyone in this room to be able to decrypt this stuff, then they will all we will encrypt the keys for all of us. The symmetric encryption key will be encrypted for all of us, and then we can all get that key and we can all read this encrypted material. This is how it's done.
What you just said is
that
any
sparse.
Yeah. Since we like specialize in the PKI part, but
is
like,
there support for it?
In
your solution, is there support for symmetric key?
No. Kind of. Like when you, the end program when it decrypts something will use a symmetric key. So, but EGBCA doesn't bother about that part. We produce the certificates and like generating the asymmetric keys, and then the end system will use symmetric encryption, perhaps. It depends on the application.
My question, if it's better safe to make it, just say so. I understand you use it in the end, so I'm happy because I have a question on that.
Yep.
And that is, can one use your interface, your administration tool, can one use it to replace what comes with OpenVPN for generating keys and managing them?
Yes. That's actually what we did in this example.
Try to join office.
Okay. Yes.
But
no, you can.
You can come and look at their scripts later.
So.
Yeah. Perfect.
Yes.
Yeah. On the previous slide, that you had, there was a mention of no free car driver with RSA 2048 support.
Do you know of one?
Yes, I do.
No.
Oh, perfect.
Okay.
What does that mean?
It means that, it obviously isn't valid, so maybe you can answer
the question. There is an open source driver for the CryptoFlex cards from what was once Schlumberger SEMA, but has turned into Axalto and then into Gemalto. Unfortunately, the CryptoFlex product is discontinued. But
okay.
When it was available for purchase, there was excellent software support for it in OpenSE.
Okay.
You could have you could fit actually two 24-8-bit keys onto the cards.
That's very good.
Yeah.
Well, that was very good.
That was very good.
What it means is the length of the keys.
Yeah.
So if you have a very long key, it's going to take a lot more time in order to brute force attack something that you've encrypted in order to see what it is.
And the core drivers that comes with Linux, for example, they don't support this length. They only support 1024 bits.
Lots of people say that 1024 should be enough for a very long time. It basically depends on who it is you're afraid of and how serious they are about cracking your key.
And how paranoid you are.
And how paranoid you are, that sort of thing. What key do you want?
Yes.
For this tool, when you create certificates, what attributes are forced into or are that optional? What attributes, like name or
yes,
city or something? Are that optional?
Yeah, of course.
Yes.
You could create whatever profile you like. If you you could use like a name, common name. You could use a nickname. You could use like a serial number, if you like that.
You could put in only an IP. You could put in only an email address.
That's.
Nothing is required,
or even
no,
shoe
no.
size,
and all is optional.
Yeah, absolutely.
And later on.
So, but it might be so that the program you're using it for later will require the certificate to look a certain way. So then you have to follow that. But EGBCA is you're totally free to create whatever you like.
So, a technical question: do you know of any ASN1 encoders?
We use the Bouncer Castle library.
Okay.
It's an Australian. LGPL, it's really good.
Okay.
Anyone else?